So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and today we're going to be talking about physical therapy issues today. We'll be taking a look at the effects of jumping and weight-bearing exercises, how that affects bone health, and we'll look at it from a lot of different perspectives, but especially from children's perspective. It's a great thing to do to get your children or your grandchildren going for strong bone health to do some jumping and weight-bearing exercises. Lori Tine-Brody, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum, our guest today. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health, the Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, great to have you back.
Awesome to be here on such a lovely day.
Yeah, Jill Tine-Nissenbaum with us as well, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill, good to see you again.
It's great to be here.
Mm-hmm. You may have a question about bone health or some other physical therapy issues. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Well, let's talk about jumping first as it relates to kids. I'm trying to think now. How it affects bone health.
Right. So they've done a lot of studies looking at how impact really helps you lay down more bone. And what we know from a research perspective is, first of all, we always think of osteoporosis as being the little old lady's disease, right?
Yeah.
But in reality, it's actually almost a disease of the adolescent, because during that adolescent growth spurt is when you can acquire the most bone. So what we'd like to do is have adolescents fill their bone bank as much as they can during that adolescent time frame. So when they do become older and they're postmenopausal women and they start withdrawing bone from their bone bank is full to begin with. So really what we need to do is we need to optimize bone health early on in life so we can kind of minimize osteoporotic fractures later in life. So there's been a lot of research looking at the importance of impact and strength training in the adolescent population and really trying to find when this quote-unquote sweet spot is. And basically what we know for girls is it's basically 2 years before and 2 years after the onset of menses seems to be when girls acquire the most bone, the most rapidly. So what we know is doing things like jumping, some resistance training, which can be body weight. It doesn't need to be, or with bands, it doesn't need to be heavy, heavy weights, will overload the bone such that girls will lay down more bone mineral density.
Right. And, you know, physical therapy as a profession, you know, historically we've looked at and treated people who have various kinds of problems, such as the older women who have osteoporosis, or they may come to us with a spinal fracture or a hip fracture. And so we talk to them about the importance of, you know, strength training, even at that point in their life. But honestly, that's too late.
Right.
So
yeah.
The focus is on prevention and wellness, and that is a big component of the physical therapy profession and a big push now, both within physical therapy and other health-related fields, where we look across the lifespan. It's hard for young teenagers
right.
to think about becoming that little old lady
right.
with a fracture. So it's going to be incumbent on the parents, on the coaches, on the physical education teachers, all the people who surround these kids to relay that message and support them in the things that are necessary to build their bone bank. So when they're older, they have what they need, and they look back and they say, thank you.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the importance of physical education classes and making sure that's part of an essential curriculum in a middle school, for example, that becomes very, very important. We also know that the type of impact is important. We know that it should be what we call odd impact. So in other words, it can't always just be running straight ahead. There has to be some twisting and rotation. So sports like basketball and soccer that have that what we call triplane motion are very conducive to increased bone mineral density. And part of why I wanted to bring up at this point in time is because so many kids head to the pool during the summer, which is fabulous. It's a great activity. It's wonderful. But what we do know is that swimming does not build bone mineral density as much as those impact activities. Mm-hmm. So we don't want kids to get completely away from some sort of activity that has some weight bearing in it, whether it's playing kickball in the front yard with your neighbors. That's fabulous. We just want to make sure that it kind of continues throughout
right.
the year.
And that it's incorporated. And you made a really good point about physical education.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Because I often hear reports. I have kids who are middle schoolers, as do you,
yes.
who tell me that in their classes they spend a large portion of their time standing around, listening to the rules of the game, and not a lot of time actually just moving. So, you know, we really want to emphasize the importance of having that infrastructure, because that's really where we're going to hit and the largest majority of kids with this important message. And so we really want to get that message out to those in the Department of Public Instruction and those who are in charge of curriculum to make sure that a physical education stays in the curriculum for at least 3 days a week, mm-hmm. and that our physical education teachers are educated in a way so that they understand this and that they are incorporating these kinds of activities into the classroom, making sure kids are actually moving when they're there.
Right. There's a middle school here in town that does, before they do whatever unit activity they do between 8 and 12 minutes of just movement. It's body weight, lunges with some rotation, some bands, some upper body movements, nothing with heavy weights at all. And we've been following that cohort and looking at their bone mineral density, and their bone mineral density is higher than the school in the same district that doesn't do it.
Yeah.
And it's 8 to 12 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah. Yeah. So this
hardly
is,
any equipment, yeah. easily
yeah.
implemented.
Yeah.
So Emily's volleyball camps and basketball camps in the mm-hmm. summer.
Fabulous.
I've got 2 5-pound weights at home, mm-hmm. and so we sit there mm-hmm. watching TV. We pick up those weights and work on, and they're just 5 pounds each.
Right.
So
yep.
She can handle
right.
those.
Right. And I think the other thing, I think about this because I have a 14-year-old daughter, and she's a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the odd movements that they do.
Yes,
and they do a lot
sure.
of that. So I'm thinking that she's going to be good if I could just get her to get a little more vitamin D in her body.
I thought you were going to say behave.
Oh, that
yeah.
too.
Yeah, so I have a lacrosse and basketball player, so that's wonderful, odd impact. But mm-hmm. vitamin D is very important, and you know, the number one source for vitamin D is the sun. But sunscreen abates about 95% of what we get. It's still essential that you wear sunscreen. Absolutely cannot not wear sunscreen, but just know that just because you're out in the sun, if you have sunscreen on, it does diminish how much vitamin D you do absorb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of good things there, and I think we may get some questions along the line relating to that, but right now some other questions, and again, you can join us a couple of open lines at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. And something a little different here, let's go to Barbara in McFarland. Barbara, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. I have a question for the therapist that relates to my husband's bilateral hip replacements. One was done like 8 years ago, and one was done like 9 years ago.
Okay.
And on the left side, it has turned out, and we discovered it through an EMG, that his left gluteus medius
yes.
no longer is functioning.
Yes.
And, of course, now he limps.
Yes.
And so have you ever heard of that happening with the incision was probably through that muscle, partly anyway. But do you know
yeah.
anything about that?
Yes.
Yes, yes. That's unfortunately one of the negative sequelae of that posterior approach
yeah.
where they go through that muscle. And we spend a lot of time in physical therapy rehabilitating people whose muscles are not functioning. So there was an EMG showing that it was not innervated anymore. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, that's like the wiring in your house. If there's no electrical input to that muscle, there's no getting that muscle to fire.
Right.
So at that point, we're looking at damage control, and we're looking at strengthening other muscles mm-hmm. to help stabilize his hip when he walks. We're looking at adding assistive devices to try to normalize his gait. What we don't want is him walking with a big limp, because it's going to impact the muscles around his pelvis and his low back. Right. Some limp may not be able to be averted, but what we want to do is figure out how to minimize it.
Right. Absolutely. And that is unfortunately one of the negative consequences of that posterolateral approach, but it does apparently give surgeons a really good view of what they need to do. So they always have to consider the cost-benefit ratio.
Yeah. So he needs to do some physical therapy.
There's muscles that you can strengthen that are what I would refer to as a distant second to what the gluteus medius does. You can get those as strong as possible. And then, like Lori said, probably offer an assistive device, in the other hand, a cane, something like that. So he's had two total hip replacements. And so the last thing we want to do is have weakness in his core and his pelvis and have him end up with back pain with walking with a limp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
All that. Thank you so much for calling, Barbara. Appreciate your call. I want to give Colette in Three Lakes a chance to join in. Colette, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm that little old lady you were talking about. I've been in retail and touch my whole life on my feet, and I'm paying the price now. And I'm wondering what else I can do. I've been treated by a foot doctor, and apparently I have a flexible flat foot. And I'm getting a bunion, so my feet are starting to get misshapen. And I get a lot of pain, and at this point I lie in bed, even lying in bed at night, and it hurts.
Yeah.
It gives me back pain. And, okay, did some physical therapy, and I wore a boot for a while, and it goes into my Achilles tendon.
Yep.
And about in March, I got a steroid injection in my foot. Oh, and then it just made it feel so much better, but now it's coming back.
Yeah.
So is it plantar fasciitis? Is that the issue that
I had plantar fasciitis. All included in that. I had like everything that went. It's more like the Jones bones on the top of my feet with some arthritis and I think it's just about everything.
So. Yeah. Well, my guess is if you have really flat feet at her mid-tarsal joint, she's probably breaking down,
right.
And that's where she's getting that pain on the top of your foot, Colette.
Right. And is it both feet?
Well, one is worse. The right is worse than the left, and that's the one that has the bunion. The other one doesn't have a bunion for some reason.
So, are you still working retail?
Yes. I went from full time to part time.
Okay.
I was ready about March. I was about ready to quit because I mean it was like it was really painful.
So, something that's going to be really important for you is shoe wear. Because working retail, you're on your feet the entire time. You're probably on a harder surface, may or may not have any carpet over it, but nonetheless, it's a
hard
surface.
And I do have fitted orthotic.
Okay. And
but it's still starting to, I get up in the morning and it's like I'm holding on to furniture.
Right,
but,
right. Have you tried a night splint at all?
No, I haven't.
So a night splint may, I know it sounds like plantar fasciitis is part of this, but I'm wondering if a night splint to kind of hold your Achilles in a little bit of a lengthened position would be a good strategy for you. It might be that if you're sleeping with your feet pointed, that Achilles is getting a little tight. And so sleeping in a night splint might be a really good strategy for you. And then you're one of those people that should be honestly in shoes 24/7. When you're up and walking around in your house, you need to be in well-supported shoes. You need to have not house slippers, but house shoes that you wear with really good arch support. You need to be wearing really, really good shoes at work with a very, very small heel, no high heels or anything like that.
And do you do any kind of exercise, Colette?
Other than walking, no, not really, not too much because, well, it's so painful. I try and do stretches. Tendon stretches.
Right. Okay. So I'd suggest getting in a pool if it's at all possible for you, if you can do like a deep water aerobics class or something like that to help keep your hips and core and back strong. Because as your feet break down, you're going to start to feel it up the chain. You're going to feel it in your knees. You're going to feel it in your hips. You're going to feel it in your back. And so looking at what are the potential consequences of having bad feet, this is what we see. So if you can intervene now and get into a regular exercise program that does not require you to be on your feet, that's going to help you out in the long run. I assure you.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call.
I don't think people realize how demanding working retail is on your body. It's very, very tough.
On your feet.
Yeah. On your feet, on concrete.
Usually carpet or linoleum over concrete.
Right.
And that gives back to you every pound you put in
it. Yeah, it's tough.
It's not forgiving at all.
Correct.
Oscar in Waukesha has something else for us. Hi, Oscar.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate your call. What can we do for you?
I'm 64 and in pretty good health, and not overweight or anything like that. And I was on a rock wall, and so I jumped down. It was about 4 feet, and I didn't feel anything right away, but the next morning, my right knee kind of hurt, and it's been like that for like 2 weeks.
No kidding.
Yeah, it kind of hurts on the foot.
Yeah. So, sorry, Oscar, we are all laughing with you here. You say, I'm 65, I'm pretty good shape. I jumped off a 4-foot rock wall.
He took that whole idea of jumping
right
to the extreme. To the extreme.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well done. Well, you know, so jumping, is this a regular activity for you? Or
no, regular activity is actually golfing, and that
right
doesn't seem to bother it.
Of course not.
It doesn't seem to bother it to walk. Like, I can feel it going up and down stairs.
Yep.
Do I keep exercising it, or do I let it rip?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So when you have that kind of an impact, when your body's not used to it, it's a whole new load for your joint. So when you walk, and your foot hits the ground, you hit with less than your body weight with each step. So now you landed, and jumping 4 feet, you can do the equation of mass times
physics
the physics equation, mass times acceleration, force equals mass times acceleration. And that was a big load on your knee. So my guess is probably at 64, you have a little underlying arthritis, and you stirred that up.
Right.
So I would say if you can continue to exercise and it's progressively getting better, I would stick with that. I would ice it. I'd do a little stretching. I wouldn't do any more jumping right now.
And deep squats. Uh-huh. I would avoid that.
Yes.
Things like that.
Yeah, any kind of deep squatting stuff, and see if over the next couple weeks it recovers. And you can check with your doctor or pharmacist if you can take like an ibuprofen or some other kind of anti-inflammatory if it feels like it's a little swollen,
mm-hmm.
And ice it and see if you recover. If you did just stir up a little bit of arthritis, you should recover from that over the next couple weeks. If you tore your meniscus, it may take a little bit longer.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling.
I love the fact that he can still golf.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Doesn't hurt to go.
Right? Yeah, exactly. They always say that.
Even if he did, he'd probably do it anyway.
They always say that.
Pat in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. So I'm 60, and I'm pretty active. And one of the things that I like to do is lift weights, among other things. And I was talking at the gym to the physical therapist there, or whatever he is, about... you know, just sort of staving off osteoporosis and so forth, and how to, you know, make sure bone integrity for my spine, and especially the cervical vertebrae are addressed. And he mentioned something about a heel drop, and that there was some studies done on a heel drop exercise for one's spine, and I wondered if you could address that at all.
So I'm guessing the personal trainer that you were talking about was talking about kind of where you go up on your toes and you relatively abruptly drop your body weight on your heels. So it's like a heel rise, but you drop pretty fast.
Yeah, like 50 times, he said.
Yeah. So the theory behind that is, or the thought behind that is, that will cause kind of that vibration or that load to kind of go all the way up through all your bones, all the way up into your lumbar and thoracic spine. I think there's been a little bit of research to support it, but I don't think it's probably any better than doing really good resistance training exercises with the muscles that attach to your cervical spine and thoracic spine. And quite frankly, in this case, it's probably safer to do the resistance training exercises versus the abrupt dropping.
Right. So if you were listening when Oscar called, he had an abrupt drop of 4 feet. So that sudden impact places high loads on your joints. So one of the things that we struggle with when we're doing exercise design for people who have osteoporosis and also osteoarthritis is the osteoporosis likes the impact, the osteoarthritis does not. And so we're kind of towing a line between how can we load this, how can we do some impact, how can we do some resistive exercise that doesn't flare up arthritis. So if you think about strengthening the bones of your cervical spine and you're doing a heel drop, that force has to travel a long way, and it's dampened at each of those tissues, from your calf muscles, your knee, your glute muscles, your pelvic muscles, your low back, all that before it ever gets to your cervical spine. So by the time it gets there, there's not much left.
Right, and we don't want to drop her on her head.
We don't want to drop her on her head is a very bad idea.
That's a bad idea.
So doing a good strengthening exercise program of your upper quarter would be the way to go.
Right.
Weight bearing on your hands, you know, push-ups, planking, front planking, side planking. If you could do a little bit of impact or a little bit of vibratory stuff with your hands, if you had like a ball or something that you could shake and do a little bit of vibration using your arms.
Right, like a half-filled milk jug.
A half-filled milk jug and do some shaking kinds of things like that. That's a more of a vibratory force rather than a hard impact. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jeremy emailed to say he has lower back pain. He's never had great core strength. Pain isn't going away anymore, and he has sat at work for years and doesn't exercise. Does he need physical therapy to help heal his back pain so it goes away, and how does he maintain a good, strong back?
Yep, that's a great question, and I would say to Jeremy, yes, it's definitely worth your time to see a physical therapist. So it looks like he has a relatively sedentary job, and if you're going to be sitting all day long, that any sedentary position is very hard on your body. So it'd be really important to make sure that he's sitting with appropriate posture, that he's recruiting the correct core muscles. Many people think that their six-pack abs are their core muscles, and that is not the case.
Yeah, that's only one piece of it.
Correct. Your core muscles actually lie deeper. I say that my six-pack abs are below my insulated cooler. That's what I say.
Oh, my God. You are too much.
Yeah. So he would definitely benefit from seeing a physical therapist. He probably would need two or three visits to get going on a program, something that he could implement at work while he's seated. And then also I would recommend some education about, it says he doesn't exercise, and getting exercise.
How can he have great core exercise if he doesn't exercise?
He doesn't have good core.
He doesn't. I thought he said he had good core.
No, he's never had.
It's
time to see somebody.
It's time to find some core. And you know, they say sitting is the new smoking is the phrase. So even people who go exercise at the end of the day for 30 or 45 minutes, it doesn't offset 8 hours of sitting.
Correct.
So that's why they've come up with standing desks and walking desks and things like that. It still isn't, it's not going to offset those hours of being sedentary, but at least starting to do something, get some exercise will
Perfect.
Be useful.
Every bit helps.
You bet.
Marion in Windsor will turn to you next. Hi, Marion.
Hi. Yes, I'm wondering about Morton's neuroma, what you might know about that. Is there any kind of physical therapist or exercises that helps that at all? And another question is bursitis, basically the same question. Would some physical therapy help that, help it go away or at least reduce it considerably?
Okay. So first, what is Morton's neuroma?
So we'll tackle the Morton's neuroma first. That is like a little wad of neurovascular, neurostructure tissue in your foot. It's usually between your third and fourth digits of your toes. And so it's right along your metatarsal head. So a lot of people will complain about kind of numbness and tingling into their third and fourth digit, especially if they're wearing shoes that are too tight or if they're on their toes a good deal. For example, there's a lot of people who will get off a Stairmaster because they're kind of up on their toes the entire time or an elliptical and say that they have this numbness and tingling. So you can get them removed. Unfortunately, many times they grow back. So what we usually try to do is just modify the environment instead. So wearing shoes with a very wide toe box often helps, because if you're, you know, if your metatarsal heads are crunched together, it will kind of squish that Morton's neuroma. So a wider toe box, making sure you're not in high heels and forcing the load onto that part of your toes is a good strategy.
And sometimes some type of orthotic device to open up and kind of splay that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if you have any kind of musculoskeletal tightness, if you have tightness in your heel cord or in your midfoot that's causing more compression in that area, we can teach you some joint mobilization or ways to mobilize and stretch those tissues so that you don't A, develop secondary problems, and B, might be able to create enough space to take some of the pressure off the neuroma itself.
Right.
So then the second question was about bursitis. What bursa are you having trouble with, Marion?
The right hip.
The right on the outside of your hip?
Yes. Uh-huh. And actually, I do have it in the left one, too, but that one doesn't bother me that much.
Okay.
But the one on the right bothers me, especially at night in bed.
So was it how was it relative to your Morton's neuroma? Same side, other side?
Other side.
Okay. So she's probably compensating,
right, exactly,
with for your Morton's neuroma, which again goes back to something we said earlier. When your feet hurt, things move right up the kinetic chain to the knees, to the hips, to the back, which is why we really try to tackle those foot problems right away. So part of the treating the bursitis is going to be dealing with your Morton's neuroma. So that would be step one, because we can treat the bursitis locally, but it may continue to bother you until you fix the Morton's neuroma.
Well, I thought I had the bursitis before I had the neuroma, but
you may have.
Possible.
You very well may have too, and this may have just aggravated or it's disallowing it from healing. So it's important when you do. You mentioned at night it bothers you. It's important that if you sleep on your side that you put a pillow between your knees. That will be very, very important, because if you don't and your knees kind of come together, that will put a lot of stress or tension on some of the muscles that cross that bursa, and it can actually irritate the bursa. The ideal position for you would probably be sleeping on your back with your knees to flex to offload your bursa a little bit.
Yep.
The other thing, Lori,
no, go ahead. That's all right.
You're
used to it.
I am.
I'm used to it all the time. Yeah, I was just going to say, so then seeing a physical therapist, if you haven't seen anyone for a couple visits, would be really useful, and they're going to look at your posture from stem to stern to see if there's anything in how you're standing, how you're moving, how you're walking that are contributing to both these problems. So we often see this bursitis in people who have weakness around their hips. So we work hard on strengthening the hip and core muscles to optimize your alignment from your hips to your knees to your feet while you're walking, standing, and moving. And then we do some stretching, because there are some fairly thick connective tissues that cross across that hip joint. And as you move during your gait cycle from flexion to extension, it snaps back and forth across that bursa. So if that tissue is tight, it's going to aggravate that bursa. So we work on stretching. So we would start with a good evaluation to see which are the most key components contributing to your problem.
Right.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today. Just to let you know, at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guests take a look at the political news of the week, including the testimony of former FBI Director James Comey. Right now, taking a look at physical therapy issues with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. As you were talking, Lori, you mentioned heels, and I was thinking back to the weekend. I was watching a parade, and the band director of one of the bands, a woman, was, this is a 2.5 mile walk, and she was directing walking backwards, and she had heels on. And I thought, how do you do that?
Right,
they weren't 3-inch, but they were at least 2-inch.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know the saying. Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards
and in
high
heels.
Yeah,
there you go.
So, but yeah, that's very challenging.
But you know, Larry, you brought up a good point. There is there's a growing body of research on the importance of walking backwards. So, if you see people out on a track or on a trail walking backwards, you know, we always walk forward. That's what we do. But there's some research showing that it's important to also walk backwards. It works your muscles in a different way, in a different range, in a different type of muscle contraction, and works your joints differently. So backwards, you're going to go toe-heel, which is going to be a different type of loading pattern. So if you're a regular walker, you might want to take a spin either around a track or somewhere where you can walk safely right. backwards without running into someone or stepping off a trail.
Right.
There we go. Karen in Milwaukee, it is your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you. I am calling about my fingers. I work as a chef. I have never been diagnosed with arthritis, but I have pretty knobby, like, mid-joints in my fingers.
Yep.
But what I've been experiencing is what I call pain in tendon or maybe fascia, both in my index and pinky fingers, between, like, the top joint and the mid-joint. Mm-hmm. And just wondering if I can exercise them. Or what may be going on?
Sure, that's a great question. Well, those, like, the little bony knobs you're talking about at your middle joint, those are called Bouchard's nodes, and that's usually a sign of some arthritic changes or wear and tear in your joints. That's not that uncommon. The fact that you're having this kind of overuse in your index finger and your pinky finger makes perfect sense for the fact that you're a chef, because how we use those fingers, we use our middle finger and our ring finger kind of as our stabilizers, and then our index finger and our pinky finger curve around and are required to have the most mobility when we hold on to things and grasp things and cut and do all of those things. So it's not surprising that you're getting a little bit of overuse in those two fingers, because that's the nature of how we use it.
So the question is, will PT help?
Yeah.
And my response would be, you're a chef. This is what you do for a living. There are some things that can help with that. I wouldn't say, oh, go out and get a ball and squeeze it to strengthen those two hands. I would refer you to a hand therapist.
Absolutely.
To see somebody who specializes in hand. There are both physical therapists and occupational therapists who specialize in hand.
Okay.
And you live in Milwaukee, so there should be plenty of people around. There, if you call to a clinic close by, you really want a certified hand therapist. So there may be people who say, oh yeah, I do hands. If it were me and I were someone who relied on my hands for work, I would want to see a certified hand therapist and have them look at your hands. They can talk to you about modification of your tools.
Right.
They can help you with ergonomic things and potentially splinting. There's a number of ideas that are out there.
Right.
Sure. Is it the fascia or the tendon is the pain?
It's really hard to say without evaluating you. It's probably a combination of both. You probably have irritated the tendons a little bit, and then you'd be rubbing against your fascia and irritating it. It's probably a little combination of the both.
It will both ache, or if I touch it, you know, hit it on something, it will send quite a shocking pain. So
do you get any numbness or tingling?
Rare, almost never, no.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A certified hand therapist.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yes.
Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. On Facebook, Susan wonders, and this goes back to our earlier discussion about jumping for bone density and so forth. She wonders about yoga. Can that help strengthen bones? Some yoga positions incorporate movement and even jumping.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. And so if we step back and we take the 10,000 foot view, there's all different kinds of exercises that are placed in these categories. There's yoga, there's Pilates, there's strength training, there's Feldenkrais, you know, there's clothes chain, there's all different classifications of exercise. And what matters is that you have odd movements, as Jill said. So yoga would certainly fit in that, as would Tai Chi and things like that. Potentially some impact. You know, some yoga will have some impact. There's other kinds of yoga that would have no impact at all. There's some yoga that's very strength training based. There's some yoga that's very flexibility based.
Right.
There's some that's very balance based. So to say yoga yes, yoga no, doesn't really answer your question. So the answer to your question is you need some impact, and you need some poses that require strength. So where your muscles are actively contracting and pulling on your bones. So if you're stretching,
not really.
But if you're doing some kind of pose where you have to hold yourself and your muscles are working hard, thinking plank as a great example that most people understand. You are using and contracting your muscles or pulling on your bone.
Right. Especially some of the yoga poses that involve loading through your upper extremity. Because there's a lot of them that involve putting your hands down. And those would be great examples of weight bearing or loading through your upper extremity.
And that's great for your thoracic spine, which is really important for women, and in your cervical spine, which was one of the questions we had earlier, I think, from Pat.
Yeah.
Very good. Nancy in Maquanago, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I have been to two doctors. One's a specialist, and I think they know what they're talking about, but I don't know. I have, but first of all, one said I had fasciitis in my heel. The specialist says I don't. I have bursitis in my heel. Now, I got a cortisone shot. It didn't seem to work. Now I'm getting some pills. I've done exercises and everything, but I can hardly walk on that heel. It is so painful. Okay. I'm wondering if there's anything else I could possibly do. I've been doing exercises, rolling my heel on a hot ice bottle. I don't know what... You got any other suggestions?
Sure, yes. So let's start, Nancy. Where does your foot hurt? Where in your heel? Your heel's a pretty big place. Is it underneath? Is it in back?
Right in the center under my heel.
So in the center, but it's not towards your arch?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just in the center.
Okay, so there's no bursa there. Mm-mm. Let's just start with that.
I'd say
really?
I'd go fat pad.
I go fat pad, too.
Oh. We're going fat pad. We're going fat pad. So Nancy, there's a fat pad that kind of helps us absorb shock right under our heel.
Uh-huh.
And when we step, you think about it, when you put your load through it, it can kind of squish out to the side.
Right.
And what we need is something to keep the fat pad under our heel and supported when we walk. So something as simple as a heel cup.
A heel cup. So let me ask this. Where did you get the cortisone injection that didn't help?
Oh, probably now, about 3 weeks,
okay,
three weeks ago.
Where did they inject? Was it in...
On the side of my heel.
On the side of your heel. Mm-hmm. Outside, inside, backside?
Inside.
So it looks like they were going for the insertion of the plantar fascia. And it didn't help.
So the other thing to keep in mind, the fat pad, like any other connective tissue, it has nothing to do with body weight,
just for the record.
Just because it's called a fat pad. You have them in various places in your body. They are to provide cushion. As we get older, that kind of thins, and it isn't as robust and as cushioning as it used to be before. There's also a little nerve that travels through there. So if the fat pad's not really doing its job, it can aggravate that nerve, and so sometimes it can mimic other things, which is maybe why your doctors went different directions with the treatment.
Sure. He even gave me one of those pressure boots now that I'm supposed to wear, but that hurts too.
Oh yeah, I'd go back to the heel cup,
right?
And there's a whole multitude of different kinds of heel cups, and I would do that to see if one of those works for you. And I would put the ice underneath my heel.
Right.
I probably wouldn't roll the ball underneath my bottle underneath your arch.
It doesn't sound to me like you need to stretch anything. It sounds to me like you need more support under there. So I think the heel cup would help with that.
Find whatever you're talking about.
Just at a drugstore.
Right. It's called a heel cup.
Yeah.
And they look like a cup.
Like a little cup, yeah.
Surrounding your heel.
Oh, C-U-P.
C-U-P. Yeah.
And they're usually made out of rubber and a little bit flexible. Yeah. And what they do is they kind of hold everything together under your foot, and they kind of come up the side. And you put them in your shoe. Do you wear them in your shoe?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and if that's not working, go see a physical therapist and see if they can figure it out. Because the other thing is, you know, you add that cushion, but sometimes if you compress it too much, it can be annoying also, which is maybe why the boot isn't so great. So it may take a little bit of work and fussing with someone who has some expertise in the area to try to get it just right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then call back and let us know how
you are next month.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when I sit and get up. Yep. Oh, my gosh. It's so painful. I can't even put my foot down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, try that heel cup.
Yeah, that's why they thought it was plantar fasciitis, because that's a fairly classic symptom of plantar fasciitis.
Right.
But it could also be an inflammation in her heel.
Right. Yeah. And if the injection didn't help and you kind of go by location of pain, you kind of rule out plantar fasciitis and you can think about the heel pad.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Nancy. And get back to us. Let us know how it works. Let's go to Jude in Iola next. Hi, Jude. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I actually have one issue and my husband has another.
Okay.
It's a buy one, get one free deal.
Well, it's like it always seems like sometimes we both have the same issues on the same day.
Oh, marriage.
Anyway, my husband's been having a problem for probably 8 years with he's been diagnosed with heel pain after he was running on the beach, not running for exercise, but just chasing these little baits to go fishing in Florida.
Yeah.
And he was having so much fun, but then after that, this pain escalated, and he was diagnosed with tarsal tunnel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been through, getting the orthotics, being diagnosed by three different doctors, podiatrists, and following all the things he was supposed to, including having extensive orthotics made for him.
Yep.
And it just seems like certain things just aggravate it and just, bring on more pain.
Sure.
He just doesn't seem to be getting any help.
What would you, does he complain of pain, or is it more numbness and tingling? And is his pain on the inside of his, it's pain. Is it on the inside of his foot?
Yes. And he tends his foot tends to roll in.
Yeah. So he just keeps constantly reloading that. Have you seen a physical therapist? Is that what you were going to say?
No, I was going to ask if the orthotics help.
Oh.
He said it was really difficult, really, because the orthotics are pretty hard, and
sure,
that would just make it feel worse.
Okay. So is he not wearing them?
He's wearing them in his shoes now, but I think they're not the ones from the doctor. They're the ones I think he got at Walmart. They're orthotics.
Okay.
Well, that's going to be my suggestion. Sometimes when they make a custom orthotic, they make them really rigid, and sometimes people just can't tolerate that. I mean, your husband's been walking around on his feet as they are for all of his life, and all of a sudden you make a fairly dramatic, rigid change. Your feet don't like it. So sometimes going to an over-the-counter, softer orthotic helps.
To transition, yes. The other thing is there's your tibial nerve runs down there. That's why I asked if he had any nerve-based pain. It may be that, especially if he pronates a lot, he's irritating other things down there like nerves. And seeing a physical therapist and getting a good biomechanical assessment would be a really good strategy for him. He's been dealing with this for a very long time, and I think you need to see somebody besides a podiatrist and besides the orthotics. Let's look at this from a different angle.
Yeah.
And then the other question is, if he was running on the beach, he was theoretically running with both feet, so why is one of them so painful and the other one is perfectly fine?
It's both of them.
Oh, okay. Well, that answers that question, because sometimes you can have a leg length difference,
right,
or things like that has been missed because nobody looked farther up the kinetic chain.
Mm-hmm. And what about your issue?
My issue is, okay, for 18 years I cleaned houses, so I used my upper body extensively. I have bone on bone that's progressed to where, it's hard for me to, shave under my arms, to pick things off over my head.
Bone on bone in your shoulder?
Oh,
yes,
God.
And now it's in the other one because it's progressed to arthritis.
Okay.
From 18 years of cleaning houses. So I don't necessarily want to go ahead and have my shoulder replaced, but that's where I'm at.
Yep. Yes, it is.
So a lot of people, when it's the shoulder is such a mobile joint that, and if you use it a bunch like you did throughout your life, it's definitely a place to get arthritis. There's a newer procedure called a reverse total shoulder replacement that, if I were you, I would investigate a little bit. The outcomes are really, really good, and the rehab is pretty straightforward. What it does is it changes how you use your muscles when you raise your arm overhead, and you don't rely on your rotator cuff muscle, you rely on your deltoid muscle. And there's been really fabulous outcomes with that, and there's more and more surgeons around that are doing those. We just had an aunt that had one, and she did really well.
Yeah, excellent. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tytton-Brody, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, our guests here on the Ideas Network. So if you love the WPR and the Green Bay Packers, you're not going to want to miss a special event I'll be hosting at Lambeau Field on June 22nd in Green Bay. We will spend the evening exploring Packers history with team president Mark Murphy and historian Cliff Crystal, followed by a tailgate style reception. So I hope you can join us. A family friendly centennial event in Green Bay this month, and you can get tickets on our centennial website. Just go to WPR.org/100. It's going to be a lot of fun. WPR and the Packers. Doesn't get much more Wisconsin than that.
Only if you throw in cheese.
Oh, yeah. Well, there'll be cheese there, too.
Oh,
believe me. I'm sure of that. In the meantime, taking a look at physical therapy issues with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, and Lou in Menasha has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Lou. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Great show. I do have two quick questions. I would like to get the guest's reaction on suspension systems like TRX, Jungle Gym, things like that. Think about buying one of those.
We have one at our house.
Yep.
We have one at our house.
So
that would be my recommendation.
So do we.
Yeah.
Which one do you prefer, the TRX or the Jungle Gym?
Well, I have a TRX.
That's what we have, too, because it's a little more, it's more adaptable, I think, to mm-hmm. different body sizes and shapes.
Right, because I have kids, and so different people, different sizes.
Inexpensive.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
All right, super. That's the one that I will look at. My second question is when I'm biking. I just bought a new bike, and the reason I did that, well, my old bike was quite old, but it was also a mountain-style bike. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, just a little south of 60. So I wanted to get something that was more of a cruiser style bike. So I bought a Giant. And in past years, when I'm biking, my right hand would start tingling and going numb. And I would just take it off the grip and shake it out a little bit. And then it would go away. And I'd be fine for maybe another hour or so. And then it would start coming back. I thought being more upright would help that, but I noticed that's still happening on the cruiser style bike.
So is it on the pinky side of your hand?
No, it's on the thumb side.
Oh, it's on the thumb side of your
hand.
It's
coming from his neck.
Yeah.
So I could see her, the wheels turning in her head. We were both going, is this a local wrist problem? Because that's pretty classic for bikers where they'll, you have a little bone called the PC form where your ulnar nerve wraps around or the hook of the hamate.
Right. And it's called handlebar palsy. That's really what it's called.
Yeah. But if it's on the thumb side, that's more than likely coming from your neck.
Yeah, that's median nerve, C5-6-7.
C5-6, yeah. So I would say you should see a physical therapist, have them look at your neck and get a few exercises and see if that helps. And then if you could have someone who could also look at you on their bike and see if there's any modification they can do on your bike, not necessarily to change your hand posture, but to change your neck posture.
Right. Yeah, what's your helmet like? Does your helmet have a visor that forces you to look up?
No.
Good.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right.
And the little rear view mirror glasses are really good for people because you don't have to rotate your neck nearly as much.
Right.
So I would encourage you to do that. But I would definitely do that. And there's some good PTs up in the Neenah Menasha area that could do that for you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
Have them incorporate that TRX stuff with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With your neck stuff. Absolutely.
Yeah. That'll be really good.
Yeah. Thank you. Jacob in Fall Creek. Your turn. Hi, Jacob.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
So I just graduated high school.
Congratulations. Woohoo!
Thank you. And my sophomore year when I was 16, I was pole vaulting in track and hurt my back.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
My right lower back. And I'm active three sport athlete, and I've tried just about everything. Chiropractor, yoga, physical therapy. And nothing's really been working for me. And I'm wondering what could possibly help, what maybe you guys think it might be.
Did you see a physician for it? Did you have any x-rays done?
I did not have any x-rays done.
That's what we're thinking.
Yeah,
spondy. Yeah. Again.
But my brother has had a similar problem.
Ah, yeah.
And he had MRIs and x-rays done, and nothing came back.
Okay.
But, I mean, it could be from a very different...
Yeah,
right.
So my point about that is people tend to think all low back pain is the same, and there are so many things in your low back that can be pain generators that we try not to make jump to those conclusions. But we're both thinking spondy.
So your sprain is what we call spondylogenic in origin. And if you do a lot of extension-based exercises, and pole vault is definitely extension. When you go up and over, you are in huge lumbar extension.
And then you're rotating.
And if you're right-handed, I'm sure you carry the pole on the right, and that'll definitely do it.
So I will. If you have insurance, I would step into the medical system and have a physician look at it and look specifically for a spondylolysis, S-P-O-N-D-Y-L-O-L-Y-S-I-S. You can listen to that later and see if that's the underlying cause. If it's a spondy on one side, that's one thing, but it's also possible you have what's called a bilateral spondy, which is why you're not getting better.
Right.
Those people have a much harder time getting better, and that's when you actually fracture on both sides of the spine, not on one side, and it can create some instability in your low back. So I would say before you go see somebody and start on some
program
for generalized low back pain, you investigate this more. Because as an 18-year-old, if it was your garden variety back pain and you saw PT and you saw a chiropractor and you're not better, you need to find the cause.
And so are you going to college in the fall?
Yes, I am.
So here you are, you're going to be changing lifestyles, things like that. So this is a really good time to tackle it this summer and make sure that you're going away from home to college armed with how to manage this. This is a really good time for you to be proactive, and you want to take care of it so you can maintain your activity level while you're in college.
When you're in college, there's going to be lots of distractions. And this I know I have a wise kid who just graduated too, and I'm thinking about those distractions.
Yeah.
So anyway, and potentially this could have an impact on your back for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
So you want to get this handled now.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'm glad you called.
Proactive.
I'm glad
you called. He might be our youngest caller.
Youngest today for sure.
Youngest today, for sure. Yep.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah. There you go.
Thanks, Jacob. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Do you get that very much? That kind of.
Oh yeah,
spondy. Yeah.
Oh yeah, we see that a fair amount.
Right.
Football, wrestling,
any
track,
gymnastics, anything that's got a lot
dance.
Of extension based in it.
Yeah.
It can irritate.
Bending backwards.
It's called a defect in your pars intraarticularis, and it's just a little part of your spine bone that stretches out, gets broken, and you do better with a flexion based program. We see it quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Extension and rotation.
Yep.
Let's take a little break. We'll take a little break to take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. And then we'll be back with our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. You stay with us. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're talking physical therapy issues with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Questions for them, you can call us at 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Tristan in Wausau is up next with a question, so let's go right there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Good afternoon.
What's on your mind today?
I have a little six-year-old girl, and she's has some gross motor delays. And at the beginning of the show, you guys were talking about how important it is to get that bone growth up as quick as possible with activity. And I was just wondering if there's any concerns about that bone growth due to the gross motor delays, and if so, what kind of things we can do to kind of help that along while we're working with those delays.
That's a great question. And is she seeing a physical therapist? Does she have kind of a program that she's doing with her to bring her up to speed with her gross motor delays?
Yes. Yep. They've been working since about pre-K on the delays.
Nice. Is she weight-bearing?
Yeah. Say that again?
Is she weight-bearing? Does she walk?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. So
It's just jumping, running, lots of slips and falls, that kind of thing.
Perfect. Okay, so she's upright and ambulatory, which is huge. So at this point in the game, what she's doing with her physical therapist is probably very appropriate. I would definitely keep her on that track and make sure that she continues to do those gross motor skills, the jumping, hopping, skipping, and working on those skills. Where it will become really important is a little bit when she reaches more the ages of 10 and 11. So she needs to continue kind of on the trajectory she is and just make sure when she hits kind of that critical age between the ages of, we're going to say 11 and 15 or 16, that she continues to do those weight-bearing activities and what we call that odd impact.
And I'm expecting that the physical therapist has these kinds of issues in mind. And just be sure to let that PT know that you're thinking about these things and that it's important that she learns the skills that are going to be necessary, skipping, hopping, things like that, which would be part of normal motor development that she should be working on. But those are particularly important. And any weight-bearing she can do on her hands is good.
So kudos to you for being so proactive.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything to do with diet or anything like that to help that bone stay as strong as it can then?
You know, we strongly, obviously, that living in the dairy state is great, but calcium and vitamin D are so, so important. And calcium intake, the one thing about calcium intake is your body can only absorb about 500 milligrams at a time. And so the adage of having a glass of milk at every meal is wonderful instead of taking a bolus of calcium in the morning, because if you do that, your body won't absorb all of it. So distributing your calcium throughout the day is really important. Getting vitamin D is really important, and it is truly one of the vitamins that is really okay to supplement, because really the best way to get it is through sunlight, and because we wear sunscreen, it negates a lot of those effects. Now, a lot of milk and cereals are fortified with vitamin D, and that is fabulous, but if your daughter does take a multivitamin, just make sure that it has vitamin D in it.
Mm-hmm. And she does, and I will check that when I get home.
Perfect.
I appreciate you guys.
Perfect.
Yep. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dorothy in Seymour, on to you now. Hi, Dorothy.
Yes. I had a hip replaced a few years ago, and last year in the 16th, the cement broke loose.
Oh, dear.
In the femur bone.
Yes.
Oh.
That's horrible.
So I had to have this, all my femur and all this replaced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found out that I have, my leg is quite a bit shorter than the other. I haven't been having any success in finding out how to get this leg back to measured to the proper measurements.
Yeah. What's your leg length difference, Dorothy? Do you know how shorter that leg is in
inches?
Well,
one says it was an inch. The other one says it's 3/4. The doctor measured, he says 3/4. First of all, he told me that God didn't make everybody perfect, but I understand that quite well.
Right.
And so I'm not really sure. I had lifts made.
Okay,
and I'm
good.
Not having any success in the lifts to have put into the shoe.
So it's interesting you say that, because a lot of times, I can't remember exactly what the cutoff is, Lori, I'm looking at you, where the insert actually doesn't work inside the shoe and you need to put an external lift on it. Quarter, a half an inch, and I can't remember.
Yeah, I would say it's probably between a half and three
quarters.
You're
probably
of an
close.
Inch.
She's probably very close to getting it to getting a lift put on the outside.
Right. You
of
may
her
need
heel.
To get the bottom of your shoe built up. Have you talked with like an orthotist?
They didn't recommend me to. They didn't know.
Okay.
They actually said they didn't know. I did call a therapist. He says that he could go through it, but it would be a big issue, and I'd have to pay for it all. So. Then they gave me another place to go to make a heel that to be put into the shoe, you know, but that isn't working with me.
So they talked about someone who could build up the outside of your shoe?
No.
Okay. Well, that would be my next question. So why are you not successful with the things that are in your shoe? What are the issues? Are you
have the right height? Yeah.
Are you having pain because of it? Are you limping?
And I can't walk. I got a limp.
Okay.
And I can't walk quite properly.
Okay. Are you using an assistive device?
No.
Well, I would start with an assistive device like a cane in one hand to see if we can improve your gait in the short run, okay? Because we don't want you having any new back, knee, or other hip problems. So I would say in the short run, you should have an assistive device in the opposite hand to see if we can't smooth out your gait. So that's number one. And then number two, I would see if your physician can't write you a referral to get the lift put on the outside of your shoe. and see if you can't get that covered, because it seems as though the inside is not working. You may need to work with a good orthotist who can help you with that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I did ask him where to go, and he didn't know.
Yeah.
Did you try the physical therapist that you worked with?
No, I didn't. I didn't have a physical. I didn't go to a physical therapist.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you might try that as well.
Right. I don't know where Seymour is. Help me out.
That come, but they didn't help me out at all either. They didn't help me out. They didn't really know.
What's the closest big city to you?
Green Bay.
Oh. Okay. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's good people in Green Bay who should be able to help you out. So you might need to go outside there. You could try an orthopedic physical therapist in Green Bay who should be able to help you with that and can maybe direct you to a good orthotist.
Right. And if you want to leave your name and some contact information with Jill Nadeau, our producer, I can email you. I have a really good friend who's an orthotist here in town, and she'll know the orthotists up in your area, and we can maybe connect you. Okay, so we'll get you some options.
Yeah, we'll put you on hold, Dorothy, and let's see if I can do that. Yeah.
That's up to you, Larry. That's beyond me.
I think I did that. So she's on hold. Let's go to Carl in Black River Falls next. Carl, hi.
Hi. I'd like to know a little about these ankle replacements. How do they work? I have bone on bone. I grew up on a farm and did a lot of squatting.
Yeah.
Milking cows when I was a kid. Never had any problem in high school, or I taught school and didn't have any trouble till I was 60. And now I walk with a limp, and I have pretty much.
So the ankle joint is a pretty congruent joint, so it's not one where we see a lot of arthritic changes, but there is an ankle joint replacement that you can have done if you are kind of really at the end of your rope.
So have you talked to someone about an ankle replacement? Has someone recommended this for you?
No, I just heard that they do that.
Yes, they do. So the question that tends to get posed at this point in someone with your situation is, what is preferable, an ankle replacement or an ankle fusion?
Right.
Some people do pretty well with an ankle fusion, where they actually fuse the ankle joint together so it doesn't move, and you have a fair number of other joints that can accommodate that. So typically that is an individual decision that's made with you and the physician, where they look at the pros and cons, the risks and benefits of one surgery over the other, and together make a decision about what's the best surgical treatment for you in your case. So,
And because ankle replacements aren't done that commonly, make sure that you see a surgeon that does them with somewhat
regularity
or frequency.
Yeah, you don't want someone who does two a year.
Right. I have a friend who had an ankle replacement, and she had done a good deal of research before she chose her surgeon. She actually met with three different ones, selected one, and actually had a wonderful outcome, but went into it considering a fusion versus a replacement, and ultimately chose the replacement and has had a good outcome. But boy, she did a lot of research and made sure that she had really failed conservative care and good conservative rehab before she went that route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of information for you, Carl.
Yeah.
So
the deal with Gunderson Lutheran in La Crosse, Wisconsin, they supposedly have a good ankle replacement.
Yep. I check there.
Yep. Good people there. So check with them and just come in with your questions and have a frank conversation with them.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Carl. Mike in Littleshoot, we're up to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, I was listening earlier, and there was a previous caller who was a chef, and I believe she talked about having arthritic symptoms in her hands, and I'm a piano player. I'm pretty young. I don't have any symptoms at all. My hands feel fine, but I'm worried about maybe having something in the future. Is there anything I should be doing now proactively to prevent or delay arthritic symptoms in the future?
Well, my guess is that a piano player is probably less likely to have arthritic issues because you use most of your fingers equally, and piano playing requires a lot of mobility, but probably not as much strength
right.
as the chef requires, gripping. Where there's a lot of resistive gripping. So I think you are probably at less risk of that, and actually think that playing the piano would be a great combination of mobility and a little bit of impact for your hands. And my guess is that you've been doing it for a long time, and so it's not like it's a novel task. What I would recommend, though, is working on neck and upper back posture, because you spend a lot of time with your arms in front of you, probably bent over a piano. So we work really hard on strengthening the other direction, the muscles around your shoulder blades, in your neck, strengthening your neck muscles to make sure that they can continue to support you and that you don't get tight in the front of your chest right. and weak in your back.
Right. Yep. Agreed 100%.
Yeah. There we go.
Nailed it.
Good luck, Mike.
Nailed
Thank
it.
You for
yeah.
calling. And David in Eastman, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello. I talked to you ladies a couple months ago.
I remember you.
Yeah. I live in a garden center. It's...
Yes.
Well, okay, that's fine. I'm glad I went back to work there. I must have loaded 500 bags of mulch yesterday.
Oh, geez.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, it strengthened. I had a hairline fracture of the radius on the left. Okay. The thing I want to do, I want to swim the crawl.
Okay.
I got in the pool this morning, and every time I start doing that, it just doesn't feel right.
Okay. You probably don't have
enough strength.
The right motion
and enough strength.
And enough strength. Of course, you've been lifting 50-pound bags of mulch, but it may not be the right muscles.
But how long ago did you get your cast removed?
8 weeks ago.
Okay.
Okay. So you should probably have sufficient strength. But do you have full motion in your wrist and hand?
I would say 90%.
Okay.
Okay.
And what doesn't feel right? Is it that your stroke doesn't feel right? Or
exactly. My stroke feels like... I'm compensating.
Okay.
That, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I do. And you may be. So here's what I suggest. How far do you typically swim?
Well, when I did the crawl, I would do a mile and a half a day.
Okay.
Today, I did a mile of the breast.
Okay. So here's what I'd say. You start with your mile, and if you felt okay after this, after your swimming today, then you continue with your mile, but you start incorporating some crawls. So you swim 100 breaststroke and then a 50 free, 100 breaststroke and a 50 free or something.
Some
and you
kickboard laps.
And do some kickboard work or whatever. And you gradually start to transition from kicking and breaststroke to more crawl as you improve. But and it should come along.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Mary in Green Bay asked if jumping on a mini trampoline qualifies as impact exercise, and if so, any suggestions on that?
I would call it very light impact
yeah.
because
yeah.
So much of the shock is getting absorbed
by the trampoline.
So I would say it's above walking, but not by much.
Yeah, yeah. So, and... How much time per day? Well, a lot of it depends upon your age and your other physical activity. So, you know, mini tramp jumping, if you're getting a cardio workout, you know, that's fine. If you have arthritis in your joints, it's a great way to work into it because it is a lower impact. But eventually working up to a land-based impact. And, you know, in terms of number hours or the amount of time per day, you know, I would say you have to work up to at least 20 mm-hmm. to 30 minutes.
Yeah. And again, it's probably a little harder to do odd impact
right.
on a mini tramp. You're just going to be kind
right.
of staying in one plane. So that would definitely, you'd have to probably do a little bit more impact because you're not getting the
right.
odd impact.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, Justin in Madison, we go to you next. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just had a question about what you ladies know about blown discs in the back. I blew out my disc when I was 17 in my L5-S1. I had a surgery, and it didn't quite seem to do the trick. And when I was 23 or 24, the doctors recommended, I've been going to like chiropractors, physical therapy, so on and so forth. But when I was 23, 24, I had to get another surgery. And I'm 30 now. And it seems that the surgeries just don't really seem to solve the problem. Now, I've been working out. I used to be a very active football and rugby player. I'm in decent shape. but just seems every day I'm sore, every day I'm in pain, and just no surgery and no amount of doctors are seeing me fixing.
What did they do in the second surgery, Justin, when you were 24?
They repaired the disc some more. And you're going to have to correct me. I'm probably butcher the words. It's a discectomy and
laminectomy. Good job. Laminectomy. Yeah. Very
laminectomy,
good.
Laminectomy, discectomy. Yep.
So how long has it been since you've been in physical therapy?
Maybe a year.
Okay. And what was the outcome last year? Or what kind of things did they do?
They just told me to keep on working on my exercises, even though I was in physical therapy for probably 3 months.
Okay.
And I would say the day that I walked in, the day that I walked out, there's minimal, if any, changes.
All right. Maybe it's time to see a different physical therapist and get a new set of eyes looking on you.
Yeah.
Two back surgeries in a very young lifetime is a lot of damage to your back.
Right. Exactly. And
maybe we need a different mode of exercise, something like that.
Have you been in a pool at all? Have you tried a pool?
Yeah. I used to swim all the time. It seems that I get more sore and not in like a good way after I get done swimming, even if I take it light.
So you're swimming like a crawl stroke kind of swimming?
Yeah, breaststroke. Okay.
So
back crawl, whatever.
All right. So I'm thinking backing down from that and doing a different kind of cardio and core work in the pool and some unweighting in the pool. So depending upon the status of your back, crawl stroke with its extension and rotation and breaststroke with its extension and back crawl, again, with extension and rotation can all be aggravating to your back. So those are things that we like to work up to if you're successful in the other phases of physical therapy in a pool. And we work on unweighting, we work on core, we work in cardio in a vertical position and unweighting to increase the space, your disc space. There's research that shows that unweighting and vertical traction in a pool increases the height of your spine. So working on that and getting that area calmed down and then progressing you to other things might be better. So it may be that the land PT was still at too high of a level for what your back could take, even though you feel like your muscles could handle it.
Absolutely. And the other thing that you'll definitely want a physical therapist to do is check the mobility of your nervous system, because if you've had two surgeries, you've laid down a lot of scar tissue back there, and sometimes our nervous system can actually get kind of snagged there, and our nerves don't glide or slide well, and so that could be another component that may need to be considered in your rehab. Yeah.
Good luck. Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. And we'll go to Cassandra in La Crosse. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm 28, and in October, November, I fell right on my bum, and they said I essentially, jammed my spine in the way that you jam a finger.
Yep.
And then at the same time, I developed this pain in my hip. This is, the SI joint.
Okay.
And the back pain is pretty okay as long as I keep moving, but the hip pain won't go away. I've done steroids and chiropractic care, and my right leg, if I stand more than 5 minutes, the entire thing will go numb.
Where did you get the steroid injection?
It wasn't an injection. It was pills.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So have you seen a physical therapist? Because a fall that hard makes me think that she's got a non-physiologic sacral torsion or sacral rotation or something like that that needs to be corrected with manual therapy. Have you seen a PT?
I haven't yet, no.
You know, I would really suggest seeing a physical therapist, because a fall like that where you land right on your tail, right on your bum, as you said, can cause the sacrum to rotate within the pelvis or the pelvis to rotate around the sacrum, and you can get what we call an innominate rotation or non-physiologic lesion that can be fixed with muscle energy techniques. I understand you had chiropractic care, but this would be a little bit different technique to really address if there's a directional issue with your sacrum.
Let me ask you this. Are your joints really loose? Are you one of those people who are really loose? Or you tend to be more stiff?
What? Back in high school, I used to be.
Okay.
But I'd say now I'm probably average.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So your elbows don't hyperextend or anything like that?
Only the one I injured in sports.
Okay. All right. Because sometimes people who have some underlying hypermobility, once they have that kind of an impact and things shift, it's really hard to get them back. So I would say see a PT, an SI joint injection could be really helpful for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go. Thank
right.
you so much for calling, and good luck, Cassandra. Appreciate your call. And here we are, out of time mm-hmm. once again.
Great as questions, always. As always.
Yeah.
And you guys
great
are
callers.
Back in probably about a month.
Something like that.
Almost,
probably.
Almost exactly.
Before our bike trip.
Before we take our five of our six combined children on a week-long 500-mile bike trip.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like fun to me.
Do you want to come, Larry?
When you come?
Actually,
yeah, come on, Larry.
It does sound like a lot
it
of
is,
fun.
It is a lot of fun. It is day camp for adults.
It is. Yeah.
Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today, and they'll be back in about a month, and we will do this all over again. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you listening to us here on the Ideas Network.